and the proof of his romantic soul. And this? I straddled his hips, draping my arms over his shoulders. Is mine. His hands gripped my waist, his head tipping back to expose his throat to my questing lips. It wasn't surrender, it was indulgence, and that was just fine with me. Take me to bed, I whispered, my tongue rimming the shell of his ear. I felt his muscles bunch, then flex effortlessly. As he stood while holding me as if I weighed nothing at all, I gave a throaty purr of appreciation and he swatted my ass, hitching me higher before carrying me out of the living room. I was panting, my heart racing. My hands were everywhere, sliding through his hair and over his shoulders, unknotting his tie. I wanted to get to his skin to feel him flesh to flesh. My lips roved over his face, kissing everywhere I could reach. His stride was purposeful, but leisurely, his breathing even and steady. He kicked the door closed with a graceful, easy push. Oh, God, it drove me insane when he was that controlled. He tried to set me down on the bed, but I held on.
I can't take your clothes off if you don't let me go.
Only the hoarseness of his voice betrayed his need. I released him, tackling the buttons of his vest before he straightened. Take your clothes off. He swatted my fingers away so he could take over. I stared, my breath held, as he started to strip. The sight of his hands tanned by the sun, glittering with the rings I'd given him, deftly unknotting his tie. How could that be so erotic? The whisper of the silk as he tugged it off, the careless way he let it fall to the floor, the heat of his eyes as he watched me watching him. It was the worst sort of denial, extreme self-torture. And I forced myself to bear it, wanting to touch him but restraining myself, waiting for him while coveting him. I'd tortured us both by making us wait, so it was the least I deserved. I'd missed him, missed having him like this. The collar of his shirt parted as he slid the buttons from their holes, exposing the strong column of his throat. Then a glimpse of his chest. He stopped at the button below his pecs, teasing me, switching to his cufflinks. He removed them slowly, one at a time, setting them carefully and deliberately on the nightstand. A soft whimper escaped me. Desperation was a wild thing inside me, sliding through my veins, the most potent aphrodisiac. Gideon shrugged out of his shirt and vest, his shoulders bunching, then relaxing. He was perfect, every inch of him, every hard slab of honed muscle visible beneath the rough silk of his skin. Nothing brutish in any way, not too much of anything, except his cock.
Jesus.
My thighs squeezed together as he towed out of his Oxfords and pushed his slacks and boxer briefs down his long, strong legs. My sex ached and swelled, the blood rushing to my core, my slit slick with wanting. The rigid lacing of his abs flexed as he straightened. The muscles V'd at his hips and pointed to the thick, long penis that curved upward between his thighs. Oh, God. Gideon. Pre-ejaculate slicked the wide head, his testicles hung heavy, balancing the weight of his thickly veined cock. He was magnificent, beautiful in the most primal way, savagely masculine. The sight of him stirred everything feminine inside me. I licked my lips, my mouth flooded with moisture. I wanted to taste him, to hear his pleasure when I wasn't lost to my own, to feel him quake and shiver when I took him over the edge. Gideon fisted his erection, stroking it hard from root to tip, pumping a thick pearl of moisture up to bead the tip.
"It's yours, Angel,"
he said roughly.
"Take it."
I scrambled off the bed and started to sink to my knees. He caught me by the elbow, his mouth a taut line.
Naked.
It was hard to straighten my legs, my knees weak with desire, harder still to resist yanking off my clothes in a rush. I was shaking as I untied my sleeveless wrap top, trying to pull open the loosened halves with some semblance of a striptease. His hissed intake of air when I exposed the lace of my bra betrayed his fraying control. My breasts were heavy and tender, the nipples hard and tight. Gideon took a step toward me, his hands sliding beneath the shoulder straps and pulling them down until I fell into his waiting palms. My eyes closed on a low moan as he squeezed gently, hefting the weight of my breasts, before stroking over my nipples with the pads of his thumbs.
"Should have kept you dressed,"
he said tightly, but his touch said something else, that I was beautiful, sexy, that I was all he could see. He pulled away and I cried out, missing his hands. His eyes were so dark they seemed black.
"Offer them to me."
I shifted on my feet, my sex throbbing. Shrugging, I let my shirt drop, then reached behind me to unclasp my bra. It slid down my arms, freeing me to cut my breasts and lift them up to him. Bending his head with frustrating patience, Gideon ran the tip of his tongue over my nipple in a slow, unhurried lick. I wanted to scream, hit him, something, anything, to break that maddening restraint. "Please," I begged, shameless. "Gideon, please." He sucked hard, drawing on me with deep, rapid pulls, his tongue furiously lashing the sensitive tip. I could smell the animal lust on him, pheromones and testosterone, the scent of a ferociously aroused, virile male. It called to me, demanding and possessive. I felt the pull of it, of him, felt the melting inside me, the surrender. I swayed, and he caught me, tipping me back over his arms and moving to my other breast. His cheeks hollowed with the force of his sucking, my core clenching in rhythm. My spine ached with the strain of the pose I had to hold for him to take his pleasure, and that turned me on to the point of madness. I'd fought for him. He had killed for me. There was a bond between us, primitive and ancient, that transcended definition. He could take me, use me. I was his. I'd made him wait, and he'd allowed me to for reasons I wasn't sure I knew. But he was reminding me now that I could walk far and try to keep my distance at times, but his hand would always hold the chains that bound us together. And he would pull me back when it suited him, because I belonged to him. Always mine. "Don't wait." My hands went into his hair. "Fuck me. I need your cock inside me." He spun me and bent me over the bed, pinning me down with a hand between my shoulder blades, reaching for the back zipper of my capris. He yanked on the pull, ripping it open and rending the cotton.
"Are you with me?"
he growled, shoving his hand into the opening to cup the cheek of my buttock. "Yes. God, yes." And he knew it, but he asked, always making sure to remind me that I had the control, that I gave him permission. He destroyed my pants, getting them down to my knees, using just one hand while the other fisted my hair. He was rough, impatient. He gripped the band of my thong and tugged, the material digging into my skin before breaking with a snap. He pushed his hand between my bound legs, cupping my sex, my back arched, my body trembling.
"Christ, you're wet."
He pushed a finger inside me, pulled out, pushed in with two.
"I'm so fucking hard for you."
The tender tissues grasped at his plunging fingers. He withdrew, circling my clit, rubbing it. I pressed into his fingertips, seeking the pressure I needed, soft, pleading sounds pouring from my throat.
"Don't come until I'm inside you,"
he growled. He grabbed my hips with both hands, pulling me back as he notched the broad head of his cock into my slit. He paused a moment, breathing hard and loud. Then he shoved inside me. I screamed into the mattress, stretched wide and too full, writhing to accommodate him. He held me aloft, my feet leaving the floor. He rolled his hips and claimed that last little space inside me, his penis tunneling deep. I squeezed every inch of him, pulsing around him in frantic pleasure.
"Okay,"
he bit out, his fingers kneading restlessly into my flesh. I pushed back with my arms, so close to coming it hurt. "More." Through the roaring of blood in my ears, I heard him groan my name. His cock swelled and lengthened, jerking as he orgasmed in hard spurts. It felt endless, and maybe it was, because he started fucking through his climax, pumping me full of hot, creamy semen. The feel of him coming sparked my orgasm. It rushed over me in powerful spasms, racking my body with violent shudders. My nails clawed at the comforter, trying to find purchase as Gideon pounded his cock into me, lost in a hot, furious rut. The slickness of his semen wet the lips of my sex, then rolled down my legs. He groaned and thrust deep, rolling his hips, screwing into me. He shuddered, coming again, only moments after his first. Folding over me, Gideon kissed my shoulder, his breath gusting hot and fast over the sweat-slick curve of my back. His chest heaved against my spine, his bruising grip on my hips easing. His hands began to stroke, to soothe. His fingers found my clit and massaged, stirring me, rubbing me into another trembling climax. His lips moved against my skin.
"Angel."
Over and over he said the word, brokenly, desperately, breathlessly.
"Forever yours."
While deep inside me, he remained hard and ready. I was lying on the bed, tucked against Gideon's side. My pants were gone, and he was nude, his magnificent body still damp with sweat. My husband lay sprawled on his back, one thickly muscled arm arched over his head, while the other curled beneath and around me, his fingers running absently up and down the length of my torso. We lay naked atop the sheets, his legs spread, his cock semi-erect and curving up to his navel. It glistened in the light of the bedside lamps, wet from me and him. His breathing was just beginning to slow, his heartbeat calming beneath my ear. He smelled delicious, like sin and sex and Gideon. "I don't remember how we got on the bed," I murmured, my voice throaty and near hoarse. Gideon's chest rumbled with a laugh. Turning his head, he pressed his lips to my forehead. I curled tighter into him, my arm draping across his waist and holding on tight.
"You good?"
he asked softly. Tipping my head back, I looked at him. He was flushed and sweaty, his hair clinging to his temples and neck. His body was a well-oiled machine, used to the strenuous mixed martial arts he used to condition it. He wasn't wiped from fucking. He could do that all night tirelessly. It was the effort of holding back as long as he could, reining himself in until I was as wild for him as he was for me. "You fucked my brains out." I smiled, feeling drugged. My toes and fingers are tingling.
"I was rough."
He touched my hip.
"I bruised you."
My eyes closed. "I know." I felt him shift, rising, blocking out the light.
"You like that?"
he murmured. I looked up at him, leaning over me. I touched his face, tracing his brow and his jaw with my fingertips. I love your control. It turns me on. He caught my fingers in his teeth, then released them.
I know.
But when you lose it, I sighed, remembering. It drives me crazy to know I can do that to you, that you want me that much.
His head dropped, his forehead touching mine. He tugged me closer, making me feel how hard he was again.
More than anything.
And you trust me.
In my arms, he let every guard down. The ferocity of his need didn't hide his vulnerability. It revealed it.
More than anyone.
He slid over me, covering my body from ankle to shoulder, effortlessly supporting his weight so he didn't crush me. The sensual pressure made me hot for him all over again. Tilting his head, Gideon brushed his lips over mine.
Crossfire,
he murmured.
Crossfire was my safe word, what I said to him when I was overwhelmed and needed him to stop whatever he was doing. When he said the word to me, he was overwhelmed too, but he didn't want me to stop. For Gideon, crossfire conveyed a connection deeper than love. My mouth curved. I love you too.
Wrapping myself around a pillow, I looked toward the closet and listened to the sound of Gideon singing. I smiled ruefully. He was showered and dressing, and obviously feeling energetic despite beginning the morning by screwing me into an orgasm that left me seeing stars. It took me a moment to recognize the song. When I did, I felt butterflies. At last. Whether it was the Etta James or Beyoncé version he was hearing in his mind didn't matter. What I heard was his voice, rich and nuanced, singing about seeing blue skies and smiles that cast a spell on him. He stepped out, knotting a charcoal tie, his vest unbuttoned, and his jacket slung over his arm. Lucky scurried out after him, never far behind. After being freed from the playpen that morning, the puppy had become his shadow. Gideon's gaze landed on me. He flashed me a heartbreaker of a smile.
And here we are,
he crooned. Here I am, anyway, leveled by hours of sex. I don't think I can stand, and you're... I gestured at him. You. It's not fair. I'm not doing something right. Gideon sat on the edge of the rumpled bed, looking impeccable. Bending over, he kissed me.
Remind me. How many times did I come last night?
I shot him a look. Not enough, apparently, since you were ready to go again when the sun came up.
Which proves the point that you're doing something very right.
He brushed the hair off my cheek.
I'm tempted to stay home, but I've got to clear the decks so we can disappear for a month. As you can see, I'm extremely motivated.
You are serious about that?
You thought I wasn't?
Brushing the sheet aside, he cupped my breast. I caught his hand before he aroused me again. A month-long honeymoon. I'll wear you out at least once. I'm determined.
Will you?
His eyes sparkled with laughter.
Only once?
You're asking for it, Ace. By the time I'm done, you'll beg me to leave you alone.
That will never happen, Angel. Not in a million years.
His confidence challenged me. I tugged the sheet back up again.
We'll just see about that.
8. As Angus walked into my office, I looked up from the email I was reading. He held his hat in his hands and came to a stop in front of my desk. I went through Terence Lucas's office last night, he said. I didn't find anything. I hadn't expected him to, so wasn't surprised. It's possible Hugh told Anne what he knows, and there are no records to be found. He nodded grimly. While I was at it, I deleted all traces of Ava's appointment on both of their on-site hard drives and backups. I also wiped the video footage of you and Ava being there. I checked, and he never asked security for a copy. So you should be fine if he takes his wife's cue and files any complaints of his own. That was Angus, always taking all possibilities into consideration. Wouldn't the police find that interesting? I sat back. The Lucases have as much to lose as I do. They're culpable, lad. You're not. It's never that simple. You have everything you've wanted and deserve. They can't take anything from you. Except my self-respect, and the respect of my friends and colleagues. I'd worked so hard to regain both in the aftermath of my father's very public disgrace. Those who wanted to find weaknesses in me would be satisfied. That didn't alarm me as much as it once would have. Angus was right. I'd made my fortune, and I had Ava. If securing her peace of mind meant retreating from public scrutiny, I could do it. It was something I'd taken into consideration when Nathan Barker was still a threat. Ava had been willing to hide our relationship from the world, to spare me from any possible scandal stemming from her past. It was a sacrifice I hadn't been willing to make. Hiding. Sneaking moments together. Pretending for others that we weren't falling deeply and irrevocably in love. It was different now. She'd become as necessary as air. Protecting her happiness was more crucial than ever. I knew what it felt like to be judged for the sins of someone else, and I would never put my wife through that. Contrary to her belief, I could live without having my hand in everything Cross Industries was involved in. I wouldn't spend my days in a damned loincloth role-playing Tarzan, but there was a comfortable medium between the two extremes. You warned me about Anne. I shook my head. I should have listened to you. He shrugged that off. What's done is done. Anne Lucas is a grown woman. She's old enough to take responsibility for her decisions. What are you doing, lad? He'd asked, as Anne slid into the back of the Bentley that first night. In the weeks that followed, he made his disapproval more and more clear, until one day, he raised his voice to me. Disgusted with myself for punishing a woman who'd done nothing to me, I'd taken it out on him, telling him to remember his place. The brief look of pain he'd quickly hidden would haunt me to my grave. I'm sorry, I said, holding his gaze, for how I handled it. A small smile crinkled the lines on his face. The apology isn't necessary, but I accept it. Thank you. Scott's voice came through the speaker.
The POSIT team is here. I also have Arnaldo Ricci on the line for you. He says it won't take long.
I looked at Angus to see if he had anything further for me. He tapped his brow in a casual salute and left. Speaking to Scott, I said, "Put him through." I waited for the red light to flash, then opened the line on the speaker. "Where are you now?"
"Hello to you too, my friend," Arnaldo greeted, his voice accented with the notes of Italy. "I hear I missed you and Ava at the restaurant this week."
"We had an excellent lunch."
"Ah, it is the only kind we serve. We are not so bad with dinner, either."
I rocked back in my chair. "You're in New York?"
"Yes, and planning your bachelor party, which is why I'm calling. If you have plans this weekend, cancel them."
"Ava and I will be out of town."
"She will be out of town. In fact, out of the country, from what I understand from Shauna. And you will be out of town, too. The rest of the guys are in agreement with me. We are going to force you to leave New York for a change."
I was so taken aback by the first part of what Arnaldo said that I hardly heard the last. "Ava isn't leaving the country."
"You'll have to take that up with her and her friends," he said smoothly. "As for us, We are going to Rio. I found myself standing. Damn it. Ava wasn't in the crossfire. I couldn't just take an elevator and find her.
I'm going to ask Scott to arrange the flight, he continued. We leave Friday evening and plan to return Monday in time for you to go to work. If you are ambitious enough.
Where is Ava going?
I have no idea. Shauna wouldn't say, because it's not for you to know. She told me only that they would be gone for the weekend, and I should plan on keeping you occupied, because Carrie doesn't want you to interfere.
That's not his decision to make, I snapped.
He paused.
Being angry at me won't help you, Gideon. And if you don't trust her, my friend, you shouldn't be marrying her.
My grip on the phone tightened. Arnaldo, you're the closest friend I have. But that'll change if you don't get your head out of your ass when it comes to Ava.
You mistake me, he corrected hurriedly. If you cage her for your own security, you will lose her. What is considered romantic in a boyfriend can be stifling in a husband.
Realizing he was offering advice, I started counting to 10. I made it to 7. I can't believe this.
Don't get me wrong. Arash assures me she is the best thing to ever happen to you. He says he has never seen you happier and that she adores you.
I've said the same. Arnaldo exhaled audibly.
Men in love do not make the best witnesses.
Amusement replaced irritation.
Why are you and Arash discussing my personal life?
It is what friends do.
Girlfriends, you're grown men. You should have something better to do with your time.
I rapped my knuckles on the desktop.
And you want me to spend a weekend in Brazil with a bunch of guy gossips?
Listen. His tone was annoyingly calm. Manhattan is out. I love the city too, but I think we've exhausted its charms. Especially for such an occasion.
Chagrined, I looked out the windows at the city I loved. Only Ava knew about the hotel room I'd kept perpetually reserved. My fuck pad, as she'd called it. Until her, it was the only place where I took women for sex. It was safe. Impersonal. There was nothing to learn about me there but how I looked nude and how I liked to fuck. Leaving New York meant I wouldn't get laid. So of course I'd always insisted the guys keep our prowling close to home. All right, I won't argue. I was going to discuss it with Ava and Carrie, but that wasn't Arnaldo's concern.
Excellent. I will let you get back to work. We can catch up this weekend.
We ended the call. I looked over at Scott through the glass wall and lifted one finger, telling him I needed an additional minute of time. Picking up my smartphone, I called Ava.
Hey, Ace, she answered, sounding flirty and happy.
I absorbed that, along with the punch of pleasure and heat that moved through me. Her voice, always throaty, was huskier than it had been lately. I was reminded of the long night, the sounds she made when aroused, her cries for me when she came. It was a new goal of mine to keep her sounding like that eternally, to keep her skin flushed and her lips swollen, her stride slow and sultry, because she could still feel me inside her. Wherever she went, it should be obvious that I fucked her often and thoroughly. It felt obvious on me. I was loose-limbed and relaxed, a bit weak in the knees, although I'd never admit it.
"Have our plans for the weekend changed?" I asked.
"I might increase my vitamins," she teased. "But otherwise, no. I'm really looking forward to it."
The purr in her voice aroused me. "I've been told our friends plan to keep us apart this weekend for our respective bachelor and bachelorette parties."
"Oh,"
There was a pause.
I was kinda hoping everyone forgot about that.
My mouth curved in a smile I wished she could see. We could run away where they can't find us.
I wish, she sighed. I think these things are more for them than us. It's their last chance to have us all to themselves in the way they're used to.
Those days were over when I met you. But I knew they weren't yet over for Ava. She'd hung on to her independence, maintaining her friendships as she always had.
It's an odd sort of ritual, isn't it? She mused. Two people commit to each other for life, and their friends take them out, get them drunk, and encourage them to be bad one last time.
All the sexy playfulness she'd had when the conversation started was gone. My wife was an intensely jealous woman. I knew that, accepted it, just as she accepted my possessiveness. We'll discuss this more tonight.
Yay,
she said, sounding anything but happy about it. There was some consolation in that. I preferred to picture her suffering through a weekend without me, rather than having the time of her life. I love you, Ava. Her breath caught.
I love you, too.
Ending the call, I turned to retrieve my jacket from the coat rack, then changed my mind. I retraced my steps to my desk and called Carrie.
What's up? He answered. Where are you planning on taking my wife this weekend?
He answered so quickly, I knew he'd been braced to hear from me.
You don't need to know.
The hell I don't.
I'm not going to have you controlling her, Carrie said tightly. With guards cock-blocking any dude that comes near her, like you did in Vegas. She's a big girl. She can handle herself, and she deserves to have fun.
So that's what this was about. There were extenuating circumstances then, Carrie.
Really?
Sarcasm was heavy in his tone.
Like what?
Nathan Barker was still breathing, and you just had a goddamned orgy in your living room. I couldn't trust her safety to you. There was a pause. When he spoke again, his voice was markedly less heated. Clancy's covering security. She'll be fine. I took a deep breath. Clancy and I were wary of each other, since he knew what I'd done to remove Nathan as a threat to Ava's life. Regardless, we both wanted the same thing, for Ava to be happy and safe. I trusted him with her, knew him to be very good at his job running Stanton and Monica's security. I would talk to Clancy personally, put him in contact with Angus. Contingencies had to be planned for, and communication aligned. If she needed me, I had to be able to get to her as swiftly as possible. My gut tightened at the thought. Ava needs her friends, and I want her to enjoy herself.
Great, he said airily. We agree.
I won't interfere, Carrie, but keep in mind that no one's as invested in keeping her safe as I am. She's only part of your life. She is my life. Don't be too stubborn to reach out to me if you need me. Is that clear?
Yeah, I get it.
If it helps you feel better, I'll be in Brazil. He was quiet a minute. I haven't nailed down where we're going yet, but I'm leaning toward Ibiza. I cursed silently. It would take half a day to get to her from Rio. I wanted to argue. I would certainly be making some alternate suggestions for locales in South America. But I held my tongue for the moment, too aware of Dr. Peterson's comments about Ava's need for a wide social circle. Instead, I said, let me know what you decide.
Okay.
Ending the call, I grabbed my jacket and slipped it on. I was sure Ava and Dr. Peterson would disagree, but friends and family could be more of a pain in the ass than anything. The rest of the afternoon passed as scheduled and planned. It was nearing 5 o'clock when Arash strolled in and settled comfortably on the nearest sofa, spreading his arms wide across the back. I wrapped up my call with one of our distribution centers in Montreal and stood, stretching my legs. I was due for a session with my trainer, but he was going to kick my ass. I was sure Ava would be delighted to know she'd sapped my stamina. Not that it would prevent me from having her again when the day was done. "There'd better be a good reason why you're making yourself at home," I told Arash dryly, rounding my desk. He flashed a cocky grin. "Deanna Johnson." My stride slowed, the name taking me by surprise. "What about her?" Arash whistled. "You do know her." "She's a freelance journalist." I walked to the bar and pulled 2 chilled bottles of water out of the refrigerator. Deanna was also a woman I'd fucked, which turned out to be a colossal mistake in more ways than one. "Okay, the hot blonde I bailed on last night?" I shot him an impatient look. "Get on with it." "She works in the legal department of the publishing house that acquired the rights to Corinne's book. She told me the ghostwriter is Deanna Johnson." I exhaled roughly, my hands squeezing the bottles so hard they leaked under the strain. Damn it. My wife had warned me about Deanna, and I hadn't listened. "Let me take a wild guess," Arash drawled. "You know Ms. Johnson in the biblical sense." I turned and faced him, moving back to where he sat. I tossed a bottle at him, sending sprinkles of water arcing between us. Opening my own, I drank deeply. Ava was right. We needed to be a better, more cohesive team. She and I were going to have to learn to trust and take each other's advice implicitly. My friend set his elbows on his knees, holding his water in both hands. "Now I see why you were in such a rush to get a ring on Ava. Seal the deal before she runs away screaming." Arash was joking, but I could see the concern on his face. It echoed my own. Really, how much could my wife take? I pulled the bottle away from my lips. "Well, that's a nice bit of news to wrap up the day," I muttered.
"What is?"
Arash and I both turned our heads to discover Ava bouncing through the open door of my office with only her smartphone in her hands. She was dressed in the same workout gear she'd been wearing the day I first saw her. Her ponytail was lighter nowadays and shorter, her body leaner and more defined. But she would always be that girl who took my breath away. "Ava!" Arash stood quickly.
"Hey!"
She flashed him a smile as she came toward me, rising onto her tiptoes to press a kiss to my mouth.
"Hi, Ace."
As she lowered back down, she frowned.
"What's wrong? Is it a bad time?"
I slid an arm around her waist, pulling her close. I loved the feel of her body against mine. It soothed the anxiousness I felt whenever we were apart. "Never, Angel. You come to me whenever you want." Her eyes sparkled.
"Megumi and I are going to hit up the gym together, but I'm early, so I figured I'd drop in on you. Grab a glimpse of your hotness to motivate me."
I dropped a kiss on her forehead. "Don't wear yourself out," I murmured. "That's my job." There was a frown between her brows as I straightened.
"Seriously, what's the matter?"
Arash cleared his throat and gestured toward the door. "I'll head back to my office." I answered her question before he left. "Deanna is ghostwriting Corinne's book." Ava stiffened.
"Is that so?"
"She knows about Deanna?" Arash looked at us both with wide eyes. My wife pinned him with her gaze. Do you know about Deanna?
He held up both hands. Never met her. Never even heard of her before today.
Stepping out of my embrace, Ava shot me a look.
I told you.
I know.
Told him what? Arash asked, shoving his hands in his pockets.
She took my water bottle and dropped into a club chair.
That she couldn't be trusted. She's butthurt because he got her naked, then blew her off. Not that I blame her. I'd be totally humiliated if I showed the goods but couldn't make the sale.
Arash sat back down on the sofa. You have performance problems, Cross? You have your eye on unemployment, Madani? I took the other chair.
She'd already played Hide the Salami with Gideon once, Ava went on. And she really liked the salami. Can't blame her there, either. I told you what a great lay he is.
Arash glanced at me, highly amused. You did, yes.
Blows the top of your head right off. Your toes curl and...
For fuck's sake, Ava, I muttered.
She looked at me innocently. Just trying to give some context, baby. And give credit where it's due. Anyway, poor Deanna is torn between hating his guts and wanting to bang him like a drum. Since she can't do the latter, she's stuck with the former.
I looked at her. Are you done? My wife blew me a kiss, then took a big swallow of water. Arash sat back. Props for laying that all out for her, he said to me. You're a saint, Ava, for putting up with him and the trail of scorned women in his wake.
What can I say? Her lips pursed. How'd you guys find out?
I've got an inside connection at the publishing house.
Oh, I thought maybe Deanna said something.
She won't. They don't want it known that Corinne isn't writing the book, so they've got a confidentiality clause. They're negotiating the contract now.
Ava sat forward, her fingers picking at the label on the bottle. Her phone buzzed on the chair by her thigh, and she picked it up to read the text. Off I go. Megumi's ready.
She stood. Arash and I stood with her. She was in my arms a moment later, tilting her head back for a kiss. I gave it to her, nuzzling my nose against hers before she retreated.
You're so lucky I came along.
She handed me back the water.
Think of how much more trouble you would have gotten into if you'd stayed single any longer.
You're enough trouble for a lifetime. She said goodbye to Arash, then headed out. I watched her leave, hating to see her go. She waved to Scott as she passed him, then disappeared.
She got any sisters? Arash asked, as we both sat down again.
No, she's one of a kind.
Hey, wait!
Ava called as she ran back in. Arash and I both jumped to our feet. She rejoined us.
If they're negotiating, nothing's been signed, right?
Right, Arash answered.
She looked at me. You can get her not to sign.
My brows rose. How am I supposed to do that?
Offer her a job.
I stared at her, then said, No.
Don't say no.
No, I repeated.
My wife looked at Arash. Your employee agreements include things like non-disclosure, non-disparagement, non-competes, etc., right?
Arash considered that a minute. I see where you're going, and yes, they do. But there are limitations as to what those clauses cover and how they can be enforced.
Better than nothing, though, maybe? Keep your enemies close and all that.
Her gaze turned to me expectantly. Don't look at me like that, Ava.
Okay, it's just an idea. I have to go.
She waved and hurried back out. The lack of a kiss or goodbye rubbed me the wrong way. Seeing her leave again, I hated it more the second time. She'd made me wait to have sex with her.
she just casually suggested, I seduce another woman. The Ava I knew and loved would never have done either of those things.
You don't want that book published, I called after her.
Ava stopped at the door and turned. She looked at me, her head tilting slightly.
No, I don't.
That examining look of hers got my back up. She saw right through me, saw the roiling inside me.
You know she'd expect me to offer her more than just a job.
You'd have to entice her,
she agreed, retracing her steps.
You're a juicy carrot, Cross, and you know how to dangle out of reach without even trying. She just needs to sign on the dotted line. Afterward, you can transfer her to Siberia, as long as you give her work that fits the job description.
Something in her voice set me on edge. That and the way she looked at me, like a lion tamer circling the lion. Cautious and watchful, but very much in control. Provoked, I baited her.
You're whoring me out to get what you want. Jesus Cross, Arash muttered. Don't be an ass.
Ava's gaze narrowed, the clear gray of her eyes turning stormy.
Bullshit. You'd have to lead her on, not fuck her. I want that book published as much as you want to hear Golden Girl on repeat. But you're living with the damn song, and I can live with the damn book.
Then why bring up hiring her? I countered, taking a step toward her. I don't want that fucking woman within a mile of me, let alone working for me.
Fine. It was just a suggestion. I could tell you were upset about it when I got here, and I don't like you upset.
For Christ's sake, I don't get upset.
Right, she drawled. Of course not. You like bad-tempered better? Sullen? Moody? Are those more masculine for you, Ace?
I should take you over my knee.
Try it, and I'll split your sexy lip, she snapped back, her quick temper ignited. You think I like the idea of you getting that bitch hot and bothered? Just imagining you flirting with her, giving her the idea you'd like to screw her, makes me want to break stuff, including her face.
Good. I'd gotten what I needed. Ava couldn't hide her jealousy when she was angry. She was seething with it, vibrating with fury. I, however, was appeased.
And maybe Deanna dropping out won't change anything, she continued, still spitting mad. The publisher could hire someone else to ghostwrite the fucking book. Hopefully someone unbiased, but hey, you've got ex-lovers crawling out of the woodwork, so they might get lucky again.
That's enough, Ava.
I wouldn't whore you out just to stop that book from being published. You're the fuck of the century. I could get a few grand an hour for you, at least.
God damn it!
I lunged for her, and she hopped out of the way.
Whoa! Arash interjected, jumping between us. As your attorney, I have to point out that pissing off your wife could cost you millions.
He likes pissing women off, she goaded, darting back and forth behind Arash to elude me. It turns him on.
Get out of the way, Madani, I growled.
He's all yours, Arash, she tossed out, then made a break for it.
I gave chase. I caught her as she passed through the doors, grabbing her around the waist and hauling her off her feet. She struggled, growling. I sank my teeth into her shoulder, and she squealed, drawing a dozen pairs of eyes our way, including Megumi's, as she rounded the corner at just the right moment.
Kiss me goodbye, I demanded.
You don't want my mouth anywhere near you right now.
Tossing her up, I spun her in midair and brought her down facing me, catching her mouth in a hard kiss. It was sloppy, graceless. Our noses bumped, but the feel of her mouth under mine, her warm skin beneath my hands, was just what I needed. She nipped my bottom lip with her teeth. She could have hurt me, drawn blood. Instead, the bite was a gentle scold, as was the tug of my hair in her fists.
You're crazy, she complained. What the hell is the matter with you?
Don't leave without kissing me goodbye.
Are you for real? She glared at me. I did kiss you.
The first time, not the second or third.
Well, fuck me sideways, she breathed.
Tightening her grip on my neck, she pulled herself up and wrapped her legs around my waist.
Why didn't you just ask?
I won't beg.
You never do.
She touched my face.
You give orders. Don't stop now.
The stuff you get away with when you're the boss, Megumi said to Scott, who sat at his desk with his gaze studiously fixed on his monitor. Scott wisely said nothing.
Arash, however, wasn't as circumspect. Temporary insanity caused by pre-wedding jitters, right, Scott? He came up beside me. Diminished capacity? An epic brain fart of some kind? I shot him a warning look. Shut up.
Be nice.
Ava kissed me lightly.
We're going to talk about this later.
Your place or ours? She smiled, her temper gone.
Ours.
Her legs unwound, and I set her down. I could let her go now. I still didn't like it, but the knot in my stomach had eased. Ava was no worse for wear. Her temper always hit like a sudden storm and dissipated as swiftly, washing the slate clean.
Hello, Megumi. I extended my hand.
She took it, showing off glittering nude nails. Megumi was an attractive woman, with jaw-length black hair and almond-shaped eyes. Ava's friend and former co-worker looked stronger than she had the last time I'd seen her, which pleased me, because I knew how much my wife was worried about her. I knew her only in passing prior to the sexual assault that had recently changed her life. I regretted that. The woman who stood before me now had a wounded look in her dark brown eyes, and an air of bravado that betrayed vulnerability. Experience had taught me she had a long road ahead of her, and she would never again be the person she'd been before. I glanced at Ava. My wife had come so far, from both the girl she'd been long ago and the young woman I had first met. She was stronger now, too. I was happy to see that, and wouldn't change it for anything. I could only pray that strength wouldn't eventually take her away from me. I left James Cho's studio exactly the way I expected, with my ass handed to me. Still, I'd managed to redeem myself at the end, taking the former champion fighter down in our last sparring match. Angus was waiting for me outside, standing beside the Bentley. He opened the door and took my duffel bag, but didn't smile. On the back seat, Lucky barked in his carrier, his excited face peering from behind the bars. Pausing before sliding into the back, I held Angus's gaze.
"I have some information," he said grimly.
Considering the search for Hugh's files, I'd been braced for bad news.
"We'll talk when we get to the penthouse. Your office would be better."
"All right." I slid into the back, frowning. Either location was private. I'd suggested home so that Ava could be with me, supporting me, when he relayed whatever information he had. Angus's preference for the office could only mean he didn't want Ava nearby. What would he have to tell me that was best kept from my wife? Lucky pawed at the carrier door, whining softly. Absently, I opened it, and he tumbled out, climbing into my lap and rearing up to lick my jaw.
"Okay, okay." I held him so he wouldn't fall in his frenzy, tilting my head back to avoid getting licked on the mouth.
"It's nice to see you, too." Rubbing his warm, soft body with one hand, I looked out at the city as we drove through it. New York was an entirely different landscape at night, a fusion of dark alleys and twinkling high-rises.
garish neon storefronts and intimate sidewalk dining. With nearly 2 million people living on an island of less than 23 square miles, privacy was both rare and imagined. Apartment windows faced each other, with scarcely any distance between them. Often those windows remained uncovered, exposing private lives to anyone who chose to look. Telescopes were a popular item. It was a New Yorker's way to live within a bubble, minding their own business with the expectation that others would do the same. The other option was to feel claustrophobic, the antithesis of the spirit of freedom that was the foundation of the Empire State. We reached the crossfire, and I exited the Bentley with Lucky. Angus followed me through the revolving doors, and we crossed the lobby in silence. The security guards stood as I approached, greeting me briskly by name, while darting glances at the tiny puppy tucked under my arm. I smiled inwardly as I caught my reflection. Dressed in sweats and a t-shirt with shower-damp hair, I doubted any person not in the know would believe I owned the building. The elevator shot us up quickly, and we were walking through the Cross Industries headquarters within moments of our arrival. Most offices and cubicles were dark and empty, but some ambitious employees were still getting things done, or didn't have a reason to go home. I could relate. It wasn't long ago that I'd spent more time at work than the penthouse. Entering my office, I turned the lights on and activated the opacity of the glass wall. Then I went to the seating area, settling on the couch and dropping Lucky on the cushion beside me. It was at that time I noticed Angus carried a worn leather binder. He pulled a club chair close to the coffee table and sat. His gaze held mine. My throat closed as another possibility came to mind. Angus seemed too somber, the meeting too formal. "You're not retiring," I preempted him, the words thick in my throat. "I won't let you." He stared at me a moment, and then his face softened. "Ah, laddie, you'll be stuck with me for a while yet." Relief hit me so hard, I sagged back into the sofa, my heart pounding. Lucky, always ready to play, jumped on my chest. "Down," I ordered, which only made him more excitable. I pinned him in place with one hand and gave a brisk nod to Angus to get started. "You'll remember the dossier we compiled when you met Ava," he began. Focused by the sound of my wife's name, I straightened. "Of course." The memory of the day I met Ava came rushing back. I'd been seated in the limo at the curb, seconds from pulling away from the crossfire. She had been entering the building. I watched her, felt the pull of her. Unable to resist, I told Angus to wait, and I went back in to find her, chasing after a woman, something I'd never done. She'd dropped her name badge when she saw me, and I retrieved it for her, noting her name and the company she worked for. By the end of the night, I'd had a thin folder on my home office desk containing a quick background check. Again, something I'd never done for a mere sexual interest. Somehow, on a level I hadn't yet recognized, I knew she was mine. Knew that however I deluded myself, she was going to be important to me. In the days that followed, the dossier grew, encompassing Ava's parents and Carrie, then Ava's paternal and maternal grandparents. "We've kept a lawyer on retainer in Austin," Angus went on, "to send us reports of any unusual activity with Harrison and Leah Trammell." Monica's parents. Their estrangement from their daughter and granddaughter was just fine with me. Less family to deal with. But I also understood that while they might not have had any interest in Ava as an illegitimate grandchild, their minds might change when Ava publicly became my wife. "What have they done?" "They died," he said bluntly, unzipping the binder. Nearly a month ago,